It was likely not the birthday gift that Congressman John Conyers would have wished for. The Democratic congressman, who turns 85 this Friday, will be filing an appeal with the state after yesterday's announcement by Wayne County Clerk Kathy Garrett that he did not have enough valid signatures on his nominating petitions to be on the August primary ballot. Garrett says only 592 of the necessary 1,000 signatures are valid. Many signatures were disqualified because the people collecting those signatures were not registered voters, and according to the law, that voids the signatures they collected. If his appeal to the state fails, Conyers is talking about mounting a write-in campaign for the primary. Well, all of this has those who have watched John Conyers since he was first elected to Congress in 1964 thinking back about his epic journey through the decades and what an ending to a career that all of this could be. We're joined by Michigan Radio's political commentator, Jack Lessenberry. As someone who has dealt with the congressman and with his office, Jack, are you surprised by this snafu?
I think it's startling, but not greatly surprised. There's been a sense of disorganization, and they turned it over to, in fact, the oddest thing of all is this is the second congressman to happen in two election cycles. Remember, of course, Republican Thaddeus McCotter was a victim of pretty much the same thing. In that case, it was his own staff submitting photocopied signatures because they were too lazy to go collect them. But in this case, Conyers hired a couple consultants. And I want to correct something I said earlier on the air, which was that one of these two consultants was Adolph Mongold, a notorious political consultant. He tells me this morning that it was actually his brother, Skip, that he often works with Skip, but this time Skip Mongold was collecting signatures on his own. But be that as it may, Skip Mongold and Steve Hood, two political consultants, apparently hired these people without checking their ID. Now, the ACLU is filing a lawsuit saying that people collecting signatures shouldn't have to be registered voters, but the point of whether they prevail or not, the point is that that was the rules, it had been the rules for 50 years, and nobody in the Conyers campaign checked to see if the rules were being followed.
In fact, Steve Hood did kind of a public mea culpa that was posted this morning, basically falling on the sword, saying, I didn't check, I should have, and I didn't.
Right.
Well, you know, many only know Conyers as the 80-something-year-old at the tail end of his career in Congress. If you could, I'd like you to take us back to his early years. What was he like in Washington?
Conyers was a firebrand. We have to remember he sort of came out of a tradition. Father was a UAW organizer who was sort of purged from the union. He was a member of sort of a left-wing faction who was sort of purged by Walter Reuther back in the days of the Red Scare. And so John Conyers, always grew up sort of outside the establishment. He was elected to Congress. He won a very close primary by 108 votes in 1964. And he originally was very much sort of a maverick. When he got to Congress, there were only five black congressmen total. There are well over 40 now. And he, from the start, he opposed Lyndon Johnson on Vietnam, a little quietly at first, but then more loudly. Conyers introduced a resolution calling for Richard Nixon's impeachment before Watergate. In fact, in response to his bombing and invasion, I believe, of Cambodia, He was a firebrand on the House Judiciary Committee that voted to impeach Richard Nixon. And then, of course, a quarter of a century later, he was defending Bill Clinton on the same committee. Only congressman in history who has been part of two impeachment hearings. But as time went on, a lot of people felt that his skills had sort of eroded, and frankly, his lucidity had. But I think people have to ask themselves, is this gentleman at age 85 with some history of erratic behavior, should this gentleman continue to serve in Congress?
Well, now we've got the ruling that most everyone expected from Wayne County Clerk Kathy Garrett, that Conyers is not eligible for the primary ballot. And you wrote in Dome Magazine, your quote was, "It's hard to imagine him going gently into that post-congressional night." What do you think he will do?
I think that he will fight this in the courts, and he will try a write-in campaign. Now, people remember, of course, that last year, Mike Duggan surprised everybody by running a very successful write-in campaign and getting a majority of the primary vote when he was running for mayor. But that was an anomaly. There's lots of reasons to think that was an anomaly. One thing, everybody in Detroit felt that Mike Duggan had been robbed, that he was unfairly tossed off the primary ballot for a technicality. There was also a very strong feeling among African-American voters as well as white ones that he was perhaps the only person who could sort of save Detroit, who could do what needed to be done as mayor. But most write-in campaigns fail abysmally. There's been U.S. senators, most U.S. senators who've tried it, who've been off the ballot, lost lost their re-elections 2 years ago in the 11th Congressional District, where we had this situation where the other, where Thaddeus McCotter failed to get on the ballot. Republicans, the Republican establishment, put a whole lot of energy into trying to get people to write in Nancy Cassis, a well-known state senator who waged a writing campaign trying to win the primary nomination. She was defeated 2-1 by Kerry Bentivoglio, who was the only name on the ballot. So my guess is it's going to be an uphill battle. You never say never, and Conyers has been a congressman for longer than most voters have been alive, but it's going to be very hard for him to win a write-in.
Well, as we referred to earlier, there are some legal challenges going on, which could mean he could possibly get on the ballot. Here's John Conyers yesterday.
There are other major considerations that, to me, is work unfinished that I wouldn't want to be leaving to anybody that hasn't compiled the experience and track record that I have.
Should he have gotten a farewell lap and a chance to be the dean of the House after John Dingell retires, or is it time to bow out, albeit not voluntarily?
Well, everybody can say there's always unfinished business, always things that need to be dealt with. But the fact is, while Conyers had been the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, the House is now in Republican hands. Almost nobody believes Democrats have a chance to take back the House. I'm not sure that he would be reinstated as committee chairman if they did. And I think that John Dingell, who's been in Congress almost 10 years longer, decided sort of, it was time, enough is enough. And, you know, it's up to the, only the congressman himself. Again, it's up to the congressman to decide if he wants to run. And it's up to voters to decide if they want to elect him. You know, I was told as a kid that it's always better to leave a party a little bit before they want you to leave rather than an hour after they wish you would have gone. And I think some politicians sometimes might do well to remember that.
What do you think the possibility of losing John Conyers means to Michigan and to Detroit?
The question, it depends on what you want to do is go back and look and see what has John Conyers being there done for Detroit and for Michigan. Now, there have been, I'm not condoning this, there have been a lot of cases of long-term congressmen. Strom Thurmond comes to mind in South Carolina, who brought home a lot of pork barrel spending for their districts and their state. It's not at all clear to me that Conyers has done that. He hasn't really been on the been in a position on committees to do that or tried very hard to do that. And so what we do lose is certainly a certain amount of seniority. And it depends on assuming if John Conyers does not run, the next congressman is virtually certain to be the Reverend Horace Sheffield. Why? Because he's the only Democratic name on the ballot and because it is impossible for a Republican to win that district. Just flat out impossible. Abraham Lincoln couldn't get 20% of the vote running as a Republican in that district. So the question is, how much, you know, Sheffield, of course, is starting from scratch.
Right.
They have to build a staff. And in many cases, I mean, I don't know. Conyers' office does not seem to be the best in the world at constituent services, but some people who work there are competent. And we forget a lot of times that congressmen and women, they don't just cast votes on great issues of the day. Their staffs help people find lost Social Security checks. They help get people, kids into the military academies. They help link people up with services. So congressional offices are sort of seen by a lot of people, sort of a one-stop shop for whatever they need from government. And it'll be interesting to see if whoever replaces him, whether their office is as good, better, or not as good as Conyers' office. And someday, of course, just because of the nature of human biology, John Conyers is going to have to be replaced, if not this year, relatively soon.
Michigan Radio's political commentator, Jack Lessenberry. As always, thank you, Jack.
My pleasure.